Peter told Bornstein to work up a detailed presentation on the sports channel, which Bornstein had built into a hugely profitable franchise. When Ovitz arrived at Iger's office in New York for the meeting, he asked, "What is this? What's this meeting?" Iger reminded him that he'd requested it. Ovitz looked at his watch. "I see it's on the schedule for 2 hours. I only have 15 minutes. Let's start, see how far we get, and then I can read the rest of the presentation." Bornstein started his PowerPoint presentation. 5 minutes into it, Ovitz excused himself to answer a call on his cell phone. "That was Tom Cruise," he said when he returned. "I'm afraid I can't do this now. Give me the deck and I'll read it, then I'll call with any questions." Ovitz left. Iger, Bornstein, and his staff were stunned. They'd spent weeks getting ready. Bornstein never heard back from Ovitz. Ovitz also had a habit of sitting next to Eisner at meetings and whispering in his ear, a gesture that was meant to underscore his intimacy with Eisner, but one that infuriated others. Eisner later testified that it drove him crazy, and that he asked Ovitz to stop doing it. While Ovitz's exact responsibilities remained unclear, he scheduled weekly meetings with strategic planning and Imagineering. He also began planning an ambitious series of trips to Japan, to China, and to Europe, capitalizing on the close relationships he'd formed in the Sony and Matsushita deals, seeking to expand Disney's international business. He also took the time to write personal responses to the thousands of people who wrote to Disney each week, something he felt Eisner had neglected. Such personal touches were essential in the agency world. In keeping with his notion of partnership, he copied Eisner on every letter, every memo, and had one of his assistants give Eisner a copy of his schedule each day. He knew how upset Eisner had become at the idea that Katzenberg was doing things behind his back. And of course, despite the fiasco of his early negotiations with television producer Brad Grey, Ovitz kept trying to do deals. Indeed, he had kept trying to negotiate a deal with Grey, but when Grey eventually met with Eisner himself, it was clear Eisner wasn't interested, and Grey did a deal with Universal instead. As Ovitz later testified, Eisner didn't like the idea of doing a deal with Grey. He thought that television shows needed to be developed in-house. After that, Ovitz was careful to go over with Eisner a list of other creative talent he hoped to bring to Disney, many of them his former clients, such as director Martin Scorsese, actors Sean Connery and Robin Williams, novelists Michael Crichton and Stephen King, and producers Frank Marshall and Kathleen Kennedy. Ovitz scheduled numerous meetings, introduced them to other Disney executives, and gave them tours of the studio. Many did enter into deals with Disney, but in most cases, only after Joe Roth approved them. There were areas of the company where Eisner had willingly ceded responsibility and blame to Ovitz. Hollywood Records and Hyperion Publishing, both businesses that lost money and held little intrinsic interest for Eisner. They were the areas he'd tried to hand off to Katzenberg after Wells died. It didn't take Ovitz long to realize that neither business was large enough to be consistently profitable, which meant they had to grow, either by acquiring more talent or, more likely, by buying other companies. Disney had plenty of cash and borrowing power to make acquisitions. Ovitz pointed out to Eisner that in